Hello and welcome to iVow. I'm Jenny Prisk and your host for the interviews with the three writers who documented the lives of women peacemakers who lived and studied at the University of San Diego Peace and Justice Institute in 2015. Documenting women's stories is a powerful and provocative undertaking that disrupts the conventional practice of highlighting male leaders. Stories where women are the protagonists offer understanding of the complexities of conflict, exposition of gender discrepancies, and potential avenues for transformation. In 2015, iVow interviewed the four women peacemakers. To learn more about the women, you can visit sandiego.edu. Now we have the opportunity to hear from the women who wrote their stories. For 10 weeks, they were completely engaged with the peacemakers, inviting responses to questions that drew passion, pain, and peace-building solutions from the women. It's my very great pleasure to welcome Jenna Barnett, who profiled Pauline Dempers of Namibia. Jenna is a freelance writer and editor, currently working for a humanitarian relief program in San Diego. Jenna worked for Sojourners, a social justice magazine in DC. There, she wrote articles about women artists and learned that women have a powerful capacity to build bridges and narrate injustices. Jenna, welcome to iVow.
Thanks. I'm really glad to be here, Jenny.
And we're happy to have you. It's been several months since you worked very closely and alongside Pauline Dempers, the national coordinator of Breaking the Wall of Silence, a grassroots group that advocates for the rights of those affected by imprisonment, torture, and enforced disappearances during the Namibian War of Independence. Could you give us just a brief pen picture of who Pauline is?
Well, frequently I just tell my friends, well, Pauline is the coolest person I've ever met. Basically, Pauline started out activism so young. She was an activist against apartheid South Africa's rule in Namibia. And when she increased her commitment to the liberation movement, in her own words, her liberators became her persecutors. And she was tortured alongside thousands of other Namibians who had joined the liberation struggle, accused of being South African spies. And she's really the one leading the way to now get SWAPO, that liberation movement, who has been the ruling party since their independence in 1990, to really just acknowledge what they did to their own people, so that Pauline can heal and so the other ex-detainees can heal, but also so the nation can move from this sort of current stance of historical revisionism to one of truth and reconciliation.
Does she have the right kind of personality and the right kind of energy to work on making that reconciliation happen for her country?
I think she does. Pauline is incredibly funny. And that's something she taught me, is the valuable role humor can play for peacemakers, but also just for people who've been through trauma. And she's also a powerful speaker, but very succinct. And the sad thing is, we've got to hear about a lot of grievances that are going on in the world. So to have someone who can put her very important, unique oppression that she experienced into big words, but few words, I think it's really going to help more and more people hear her completely necessary story.
Good. That's good news. So you and Pauline worked together very closely for 10 weeks. And when you began that relationship, you were complete strangers. Yes. Now you probably know more about her than even her closest friends know about her. Yes. Tell us about establishing that relationship. You know, how did it start? How did it grow? How did it develop? And perhaps in there also tell us about the writing process.
Well, the program, the Women Peacemakers program, realizes that they're asking the peacemakers to be vulnerable very quickly to strangers. And so we have an orientation that just for a week we're getting to know each other. Both Pauline and I are a little more introverted by nature, so we were often the ones at the end of the tables struggling with small talk. But I think we ended up bonding over that a little bit, actually. So the program did this thing where they switched the roles, and instead of me interviewing Pauline during orientation week, they had Pauline interview me and ask about a story from my childhood. And I was talking very fondly of my childhood because really I had a great one. I had a loving family. And then she said at one point, just very frankly, well, did anything sad happen to you?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
And which was forward, but it also gave me permission to share a struggle I'd been through. I think we often feel like, well, I shouldn't say we. I often need permission to feel the pain I feel when I compare it to those that to pain that other people have. So she gave me permission to do that, and I shared with her a story of a sad thing that happened to me in my childhood that I hadn't shared with anyone.
Interesting.
No, not with anyone. With anyone in San Diego.
In San Diego.
With anyone.
That's
San Diego.
Right, because you grew up in San Antonio.
In San Antonio. Mm-hmm. So I'd shared this with other people, but I hadn't shared it recently. And she listened very well and then went off for an hour and wrote that narrative for me and shared it to the group. And I think it helped her understand what it feels like to be asking those questions, but it also helped me realize how vulnerable it is for her. And I think that helped us grow.
That formed the bridge where you could walk across it together, as it were, from the shared perspective.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting process that they put you through. So then when the writing started, did you have any senses that you wanted to write with empathy because it would perhaps soften the tragedy that she had experienced?
I don't think I made a conscious effort to say I want to write with empathy. I think it's just what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Pauline has had a lot of hardship in her life. I was listening to her for an hour or two every morning, and then I would go and I would listen to that story again and at 50% of the speed when I was transcribing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go home and I would write about that. You said empathy, it made me think about this. So at some point I wondered, well, when is the empathy really going to come in? When am I really going to feel this completely? It was during the writing stage when I really had to put myself in her shoes and took the responsibility very seriously. I would begin writing, and I would be writing for her, but also just to process what I was feeling. But then the empathy also would come in during the editing stage when I would come back to her and had this one moment where I was asking her a clarifying question during the editing phase, and she said, I asked her, like, well, why did you have this back pain? And she said it was because of a certain torture technique they used. And this was further along in the process, and so I guess you'll just have to trust me that I felt it was appropriate to ask specifics about the torture technique they were using. And she told me, but I couldn't quite understand what she was saying. And so I had to put my body into the position and say, is this what you were talking about? During that moment when my body got into that position, I just lost it. It was the first time I just completely cried. And I had been so nervous about I didn't want to cry in front of her because, shoot, this didn't happen to me, it happened to her. I'd just fallen in love with her. But I kept apologizing, and then she walked over to me and she said, Jenna, why are you apologizing? And then she put her arm around me and she said, you are not a stone. From that moment on, I just felt, I got to tell everyone about this story I possibly can. And of course, none of these things that happened to her happened to me, but I was really trying to lean in to these feelings of empathy. I think they helped with the writing.
I think you've just created the perfect moment for you to share with our listeners some of your story that you wrote about Pauline. And of course, your empathy was about her. Your feelings were about her, not necessarily your own. And that's the true sign of being a human being. So whenever you're ready.
I'm going to read the first part of one of the narratives that comes midway through. It's called Occasionally a Flower Grew. It takes place when Pauline first went into the Swapo dungeons after she falsely confessed to being a South African spy when she realized if she did not, she would die. She's in this dungeon, and it's her own countrymates who have put her there. Occasionally, a flower grew. The dungeon was pitch black when Pauline entered for the first time, but she could sense the presence of many other women. She could smell their dirty clothes and hear their curious murmurs filling the dugout. A woman guided Pauline to a rectangular pile of cardboard boxes, her new bed. When she lay down on her side, Pauline could feel one woman's breath on her neck and another woman's back against her chest. But when she closed her eyes to sleep, she flashed back to the torturing from the previous nights. 10 minutes after confessing to being a South African spy, she took it back and told the truth. They slapped her out of her seat, so she changed her story again. This time they wanted details. Who were her bosses? Where did she train? She blurted out as many white-sounding names as she could think of and hoped they would believe her. As tired as her body was, Pauline could not sleep in this dungeon. 1, 2, 3, announced a woman 10 feet from Pauline, and everyone turned to their sides in unison just to allow this one woman to change sleeping positions. Essentially, the women lived in a rectangular hole. The ceiling was made of corrugated iron pieces that rarely allowed any light, even during the day. Every surface was made of dirt, but occasionally, a flower grew from the wall. On this night, and on every night over the next 3 years, Pauline heard the familiar wailings of other innocent Namibians who had not yet learned that the truth would kill them here. Pauline thought about the rules the guards explained to her during her initiation orientation. No visiting the other dungeons, no sex, no reading or writing or walking into the bush, no being outside after nightfall or greeting villagers during trips to fetch water, no speaking any language other than Oshuambo or English, no sleeping next to someone who speaks your language. Swapo did not want them communicating. They tried to prevent them from learning about each other and from learning about life outside the dungeons. It didn't work. They learned about the falsely accused spies who Swapo threw off the edge of Tundavala Cliffs, an otherwise beautiful, tree-covered escarpment visible from the dungeon grounds. They learned that if you break a tiny hole into the rice bags, the 2-kilometer hike to the storage room would slowly get easier. They learned that if you bring ash from the fires into the dungeon, the smell will neutralize for a few hours, and some of the lice will smother. And over the years, they learned from the newcomers that Namibia was getting closer to independence, but they did not know what independence would mean for them, the wrongfully accused. But most importantly, they learned how to save each other's lives. Many of the children imprisoned in the camp would play outside near the office where the newcomers were tortured until they confessed. The kids ran and told the adults what they saw and what they heard. Pauline would deliver messages to the newcomers to the Oshawambo-speaking prisoners who had more freedom to walk around. "Tell them what they want to hear," she would write on the pieces of cardboard she tore from her bedding. "If you tell the truth, they will kill you."
A very, very powerful, moving, and unfortunate piece to think that this kind of thing happens, and especially to women in our world. You write very, very beautifully. How long would, say, a piece of that length that you just read for us, how long would that take to write, approximately?
It depends. That piece in particular, I wrote 20 pages in 3 days. But I would say the process began as she was telling it to me. When you notice what from her what from the interview plays back in your mind throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And whatever stuck with me, I would write because I figured if it sticks with me, perhaps it'll stick with others.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it certainly has with those of us here in the studio. That leads me to a question about using writing as a tool towards peace building. How can the two go hand in hand? How can writing further the role of peace building?
I think, one, I remember Pauline, when she was giving a lecture, people asked, "Well, what can we do? What can we do to help?" And Pauline said, "Tell as many people as you can what happened." I think Pauline really believes that what is going to change things is the truth. And so how do you change things? By telling as many people the truth as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked her during a lecture, what gives you hope? And she said, well, the truth is on my side. Sometimes I think we can be too scared to just enter into conversation. Writing, I feel like, is a good first step, where before you're ready to sit down with someone, maybe you're ready to sit down with some paper and read, or maybe a computer screen, I suppose. So I don't see writing as the solution, but I see it as a first step toward a solution.
Or has this experience impacted you personally? How has it changed your life and or your thoughts or your present, your future in any way?
I think this has changed me a lot. On a most practical level, I was thinking back to my time about a year and a half ago when the torture report was released, and I was working for social justice journalism organization, and I received an email from an editor that said, Jenna, I want you to compile every article that we have written about and against torture over the past 10 years. It was something like 20 articles, and I read through all of them looking for quotes and checking to see. And you know, I would say I left that day feeling okay. It didn't have the biggest impact on me. I was already against torture, right? I was intellectually against it. But now, after talking to Pauline and knowing her and hearing both on a personal level how it has hurt her and hearing how this thing became systemic, I'm not just intellectually against torture anymore. I hate it with all of me. Mm-hmm. I feel it in my bones, its wrongness and its ineffectiveness. And I hope that this sort of writing that isn't like just a journalism piece, but it's really a creative narrative, that people will hate torture a little bit more. So that's one way, but also Pauline has changed me, and this process has changed me, because I've realized the role that humor really can play to sustain movements. I remember her telling me about their homecoming days. So 4th of July was the day that the ex-detainees were repatriated back into the now independent Namibia. And now they have an annual, it's really a celebration and a funeral, all in the same day, which is quite a jarring juxtaposition, right?
Yeah, it is.
But I asked her, okay, well, what is this like? And she said, well, it often starts, we sit around a fire, and it's the ex-detainees who are still alive, and it's not that many of them. More people we don't know about than we do. But those who are still alive come. But she says, we also invite the community. People who lost someone come, but also just general Namibians come. The conversation will fluctuate between stories of this sort of subversive joy that occurred in the dungeons, and then also stories of who they've lost, and there will be crying and there will be laughter. And Pauline said, inevitably, like, someone will hear us laugh and say, don't laugh. There's nothing funny about this.
Mm-hmm.
And Pauline, she said, they just don't understand. And I said, well, I want to understand. She said, sometimes you have to let your body do something other than just cry. You have to laugh. Otherwise, you would just die. Knowing Pauline has made me realize that us humans are capable of so much more than I thought we were. Capable of horrible, evil things that were unimaginable to me before this, but also capable of joy and love despite that I also didn't know we could do. Those things exist side by side, and I'm still learning how to hold both of those things, but my view of humanity is wider and more complex now, and I think that's for the better.
Well, you have broadened our view of humanity by sharing your experiences with Pauline Dempers of Namibia and sharing your writing and sharing your thoughts and your concepts about peace building. And we're very grateful to you. So thank you for joining us in this conversation, Jenna Barnett.
Thank you, Jenny. Thanks for having me.